Detroit hustles harder. It's a slogan that's been printed on thousands of t-shirts around here, but it comes from an identity that often defines the city. Detroiters work harder and hustle more than anyone else. But is that a good thing? And should our connection to how we make a living be so connected to our personal identities? These are questions that we've always grappled with, but they've certainly been given new life, new meaning during the pandemic as many Americans began reevaluating what was important to them and what they were or weren't willing to do for work. This is a topic that Aki Ito decided to explore. She's a senior correspondent for Business Insider. Her article is titled, How Hustle Culture Got America Addicted to Work. She joins us now on Culture Shift. Aki, welcome to the show.
Hi, Ryan. Thanks for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. I think this is such an important topic, and you did a great job breaking this all down from so many different angles. But let's start at the beginning, because you take us back in time. You write about, you know, the idea that people didn't always work because they enjoyed it or because it gave them meaning or purpose to their lives. They worked because they had to. Take us to that point in time where you open up your story for Business Insider.
Sure. So if you go all the way back, maybe 150 years back to the peak of the Industrial Revolution, Americans worked a lot back then. They worked about 3,100 hours a year, which comes down to about 60 hours a week with maybe 2 weeks off if you were lucky. So that's a lot more than we are working today. But there was this, you know, real valuing of leisure. People wanted to work less and less so they could make time to do other things in their lives. And that's exactly what they did for about 100 years after the Industrial Revolution. Americans continued to work less and less and less until we got to the point around 1980 when those work hours completely stopped declining.
We get to a point, though, you know, right now, I believe it's around 1,800 hours, almost half of what it had been only a century before. And there was a lot of changes that got us to that point. Can you run through some of the main ones that really changed our approach to work, starting around the Great Depression?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, this is, you know, one of the greatest mysteries, hidden mysteries, I think, in the American economy. A lot of scholars have jumped into this question to figure out exactly why. One of the big things, I think, is the decline in labor unions in the country. Unions were a huge force pushing for less and less work, and they were really successful. But I think, as we all know, unions have become a lot less powerful over the years. So that was a huge factor. There was also, you know, the way that certain work hour legislation was crafted right around the Great Depression. It exempted a lot of white-collared salaried workers. This was a pretty rare profession back then, but today it's a huge portion of our economy. So that means that a large portion of our workers are exempt from these laws that prevent us from overworking. Another big part of the equation is an increase in income inequality and also a change in the tax system in a way that rich people need to pay less in taxes than before. That makes overworking more worthwhile. So that was certainly a big factor. But the thing that I look into in my story the most is just kind of the changing culture, like our changing attitudes around work. I think that was the most powerful factor and probably the one that we talk about the least.
That culture is a big part of it. And it does stem a little bit from some of the policies that you bring up, you know, looking at the Fair Labor Standards Act, right? So that ends up protecting someone that's on the factory floor. You start seeing a cap in the amount of work hours that you can do a week, the idea that overtime becomes mandatory if you go over those hours. But for the white collar worker in the office, if you're under that salary structure, there's not really any protections for you to leave the office early. In fact, it's incentivized for you to stay later and work constantly and have work be an extension of who you are. Is that part of the idea that we're starting to see make up this culture of hustle
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the most striking statistics that I talk about in my story is that, you know, going way back to around the Industrial Revolution in America, the people who worked the least were the rich people. And that makes sense, right? Like the whole point of having a lot of money, earning a lot of money, is to be able to work less. And the people who had the least amount of money had to work the most. But around like the 70s, 80s, this really interesting flip happened where the people who had the least amount of money were continuing to work less, but the people who had the most amount of money were working a lot more than before. It's so confusing, you know, because rich people are the people who need to work the least, but suddenly they were the ones who are working the most.
There's also a bit of a divide that we see between the United States and European countries, where at a certain point, this idea completely breaks off and Americans stop seeing the amount of time that they work decrease, and Europeans continue to chip away at it. Can you talk a little bit about how these two different places approach the idea of work?
Yeah, absolutely. So in Germany today, people work about 400 hours less than we do in America. That's about 10 weeks less per year, which is incredible. And I think our first instinct might be to say, oh, well, you know, they're Europeans. They really value vacation. They're really good at it. That's part of their culture. But going, you know, about 100 years back, all the way to around the 1970s, Europeans actually worked more than Americans. It was really because work hours stopped declining in America that Europe suddenly became, you know, the leisure society instead of America. When you talk to Europeans today, they are, you know, very insistent on boundaries, for example. You know, they will not take a call from home at 8 p.m. at night, you know, for the convenience of their employer. They'll just say, you know, my contract says I stop working at 5, so I will stop working at 5. They have kind of much clearer lines between work and home. These very lines that have, you know, completely been obliterated during this pandemic for us Americans.
That also goes back to that cultural perception and the cultural ideas around work. You know, one thing from your story is looking at this marketing study from 2017, and it found that if you told an American you worked long hours, they assumed you were rich. If you told an Italian the same thing, they assumed you were poor. So these are very different approaches to how we view work, because there is a little bit of glamorizing the hustle of working these long hours here in the United States. And now finally people are starting to try to break away from that. But why the glamour around laboring yourself so much to begin with?
Right. I mean, I think, you know, it's because it serves our employers. We live in a capitalistic society, and, you know, glamorizing work in this way was a great way for businesses to squeeze more and more labor out of their white collar workers without having to pay them more. So it's certainly been great for businesses, but I think overall it's been unhealthy for us workers. It's really, when you look at, you know, management books or career books today, every single one of them will tell you, love what you do, do what you love. You know, work should be your life's work. You should be passionate about it. This is the way that you should change the world. The way that we talk about work today is kind of like the way that I think, you know, previous generations talked about God, or the way that, you know, we still talk about our romantic partners, about true love. There's, you know, a complete glorification, this glamorization of work that I think, you know, is very divorced from reality.
It wasn't always this way. It wasn't founded on a cult of work. You write that it was once founded on an ideal of personal liberty. I mean, we used to have very different ideas of what our work meant for our identities at a certain point in the United States.
Yeah. You know, Benjamin Franklin famously advocated for a 4-hour workday. And, you know, he thought it was possible even back then, but surely he would have thought it would be possible by now, you know, more than 100 years later. We've become so much richer as a nation, so much more productive. If we wanted to work less, we could. And, you know, all the advanced economies in Europe prove that. But we've chosen not to. And I think that is just so fascinating, this, you know, different trajectory as a country that we've taken since around 1980.
There has been a lot of acceptance and blurring of lines. Aki, you know, you talked about the fact that, you know, in a place like Germany, it's actually become illegal for an employer to send an email after a certain amount of time during the day, you know, after 5-6 o'clock. That's illegal for them to do. They're not allowed to do that in the workplace anymore. But the American boundaries, they continue to get blurrier than ever. You know, one thing I see a lot of people talk about right now is their employers saying, we are a family. This is a family place where your coworkers are like family. That language continues to really try to blur the lines of what is your actual family and your boundaries at home versus what they are in the workplace. How are we starting to see that change?
Yeah. Well, the really interesting thing is when you look at studies in sociology over the last two decades, pretty much every single one of them shows that if you give workers more flexibility, more autonomy, the very things that, you know, we're saying that we want more today in the pandemic, you actually find that workers end up working more, not less. And that really says a lot about the underlying culture we have in America, how much even we as individuals, you know, value work and place our meaning and our sense of purpose in our jobs. I do think the pandemic is changing that because it's, you know, created this like big pause in all of our lives that made us think, you know, wait, is this really the way I want to live? I've always taken this for granted, but should it really be this way? I actually had that realization myself during the pandemic, and that's why I wanted to write about this. I wanted to figure out, how did we get here in the first place? And like we've been talking about, what I discovered was the way we think about work today, you know, this idea that work should be, you know, everything in our lives, that it should be the most important part of our lives, is a pretty recent invention. And it's very unique across the world. No one in the world thinks about work the way we think about work today.
That made me really sad. I gotta be honest, just thinking about that, I was like, are we alone? Is there anywhere else in the world that is looking at work the way we are? But you say no. You know, the other sort of, I guess, personal thing, emotional thing that's tied to this relationship with work here in the United States, and you write about this, when you are working so much and you get into that pattern, free time can feel like a void. It can feel intimidating, like you don't know what to do with it. That's something that you kind of grappled with in your story and made it personal about your own relationships with work.
Right. I mean, you know, that's the thing. Like when you stop investing in it, it becomes less and less important in our lives. I think culturally too, one, you know, an important thing is that, you know, these kind of institutions around community in our society have really disintegrated over the last few decades. You know, Americans are going to church less, they're volunteering less. You know, these, people, bowling leagues or something, they do a lot of that less. And so the way that we, you know, spend our leisure time is just watching Netflix. And that's not a really meaningful way of spending our time. We get less out of it, even though, you know, we think we're enjoying it at the time. And I think that's one of the reasons why we find work so much more meaningful than our leisure time. And it's because we're not spending our leisure time well.
I want to get some callers involved in this conversation. 313-577-1019. That number to call is 313-577-1019. What is your relationship to work or the idea of hustle culture? And has the pandemic changed it? Maybe you were working more than 40 hours a week. This pandemic came along and you said, you know what? This isn't the way I want to live my life. What changes have you made? Or do you think people should be working more and harder? And you disagree with some of the changing ideas around free time and how we approach work-life balance. I'd love to hear from you right now. That number is 313-577-1019, 313-577-1019. As we talk to Aki Ito, she is a senior correspondent for Business Insider. She wrote a great article titled "How Hustle Culture Got America Addicted to Work." Now, I'm curious, what is the next generation starting to say about how they want to work and what's important to them when it comes to work-life balance?
Sure. Anecdotally, speaking to a lot of Gen Z workers, it does seem like, you know, they have less of an obsession with, you know, work and doing well at work compared to the slightly older generation like me. I'm 35 today, so that makes me kind of smack down in the middle of millennials. We got obsessed with work in the 2010s. You know, we wanted to change the world. And I kind of feel that a little bit less from Gen Z workers today. They kind of understand that work is kind of a necessary evil. They might still like their jobs, but they're able to maintain a little bit more of a balance, and they're able to speak up and, you know, tell their bosses that they're not willing to work past 7 p.m. They're not willing to work on the weekends. And that's been really inspiring to see. But I think that's a little anecdotal too. It's pretty early. I'd like to see if we continue to see that in the years ahead.
I want to go ahead and get some callers involved in this conversation right now. Let's go ahead and talk to Christopher in Detroit. You're on Culture Shift.
Hello. I have a plan of trust back universal basic income. And what it does, it gives trust to businesses. And this will actually, businesses, which are firms, households, and institutions. And this will give the actual business the opportunity to do the Benjamin Franklin 20-hour work week for 4 hours a day, because the business is given accommodation as the cost of operation to function and everything by taking these tax dollars from the new Green Deal and the marijuana legalization, and utilizing it to fund these individualized, interest-bearing trust and holding the principles and only adding for growth and to offset inflation.
Christopher in Detroit, I really appreciate the call. Aki, I would toss that back to you. Have you seen things over in European countries that could maybe be kind of imitated here in the United States, the idea of restrictions around when employers can email you or contact you? Are there any examples of that happening right now in the U.S.?
I think, probably the most prominent one is there's a bill in Congress right now that was recently backed by the Congressional Progressive Caucus to shrink the work week down to 32 hours a week. So it would be, I think, an amendment to the Fair Labor Standards Act that places the work week at 40 hours that would go down to 32. It doesn't look likely that it's going to go anywhere in Congress, unfortunately. But even the fact that, lawmakers are talking about this right now, I think is a really encouraging sign that, you know, we are, you know, at this moment where we could be at a turning point in society.
Joe in Rochester Hills, you're on Culture Shift. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I think I was talking to you, Ryan. My saying around this whole subject, and I probably had the saying for at least 30 years, that capitalism is the best system since indentured servants. And, that's kind of where we're at in this country. We don't have time enough, to look around and, as they say, smell the roses, get involved with things, charity, government, whatever. And the capitalist system loves it. And, I was in the corporate world for 35 years. And, if you look around, most people don't know. If you go to other countries, like you're talking about, Germany, Europe, when they retire there, they have government guarantees around the kind of money they get, the kind of things the corporations have to give them. Here, they could just throw you out the window, and you have nothing. So it's a very scary premise that we're here, that we have here. And you know, the laws permeate it constantly. I go back to the Supreme Court ruling where they allowed the corporations to give money like individuals. That's when it really started to get bad. And it just gets worse year after year after year.
Joe in Rochester Hills, I really appreciate the call. Aki, I would bring that back to you. You know, that idea of staying with an employer for a long period of time and being rewarded at the end of it, that's also an idea you cover in your writing. And it's not necessarily happening as much as it once did in the U.S.
Right. Yeah. I mean, now it's very common to jump from job to job to job in America. That's not necessarily a bad thing. It means that the labor market is flexible. We want that. We don't want people to feel like they're stuck at one job forever. But there's certainly downsides to it, too. And one of the biggest downsides is that, you know, employers are incentivized less to really invest in their workers, to train them, to take care of them, to worry about their, you know, long-term well-being and their health. And I'm sure that's probably one of the reasons why companies are perfectly fine working us, you know, to the bone, because, you know, they don't care if we really stick around for, you know, 15, 20 years. They're assuming that we'll leave in a year or two, and that's fine for them.
Lynette in Rochester, you're on Culture Shift.
Hi. I was just wondering, what were some differences, or are they the same in Canada? And Canada is like our mirror country, or they're like, you know, we mirror one another. So I'm wondering, do they go through the same things we do when it comes to work?
Lynette in Rochester, that's a great question. Aki, I don't know if you know the answer, but do you know? Is Canada changing the way they work, or because they're so close to us, especially in Detroit, is it pretty similar?
You know, yeah, Canada is very similar to the U.S., but not as intense. If you think about it on kind of a scale, like you have, you know, countries like Germany on like the really, you know, the far end of the leisure side. And then you have countries like the U.K. that are kind of right in the middle between continental Europe and the U.S. Canada is even further towards that U.S. end of work, 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 but it's not as you know, extreme as where America is.
I'm curious, you know, looking here and what's changing, you know, I do notice in your article that some employers are starting to respond to this. They've offered mental health days, which I always look at that. I'm like, was every other day I was working bad for my mental health? Why are they offering a mental health day? Doesn't really say much about the days you are there. They offer things like weeks off to recover. Some are even experimenting with 4-day work weeks, which you actually cover in your story.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the most striking things about this moment today is the Great Resignation, the record share of Americans who are quitting their jobs. They're not necessarily, you know, leaving the workforce altogether. They're moving on to a different company. But because they're voting with their feet that way, companies are being forced to roll out all of these initiatives to tackle burnout in a really meaningful way, not just, you know, putting out pretty words, but actually changing their policies to try to get employees to work less. That's a really powerful thing. And, you know, all these companies are experimenting with things like the 4-day work week. Some have decided to make it permanent. That's a lasting change. I mean, once you start a 4-day work week at a business, it's going to be really hard to go back to a 5-day work week. So I think that's where we're starting to see some, you know, potentially permanent changes in the workplace. And I find that really exciting.
That's something that's on David's mind. He's in Holly. Welcome to Culture Shifts.
Hello.
What's on your mind, David?
I just wanted to comment. They were just talking about, you know, workers being, you know, or employers not being incentivized to provide long-term benefits for workers. But I think that actually evolved the other way. It was the pensions and stuff that went away first. And then workers became incentivized to jump jobs. It wasn't the other way around, because I work in a corporate environment and I sit in meetings that, you know, they ask, why can't we retain talent? And it's like, well, because you got rid of pensions, you got rid of long-term benefits. And then that opened the door for talent to want to move from place to place to place. I don't think it came the other way. You know, it wasn't the way it was just described.
David and Holly, thank you so much for the call. Aki, what would you have to say to that?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. You know, it's, as with most things in the economy, I think, you know, there was one thing that led to another, which kind of reinforced that cycle and made the existing thing even stronger. That's one of the biggest shifts in our economy over the last few decades. That also comes with like a decreasing sense of job security across the workforce, both for, you know, blue collar workers and white collar workers. And some of the sociologists I spoke to said that, you know, that decreasing sense of job security, that increasing sense of precarity, was one of the things that led to hustle culture in the first place. That, you know, if you couldn't get, you know, long-term job security on the job, you had to find another reason to work. And, you know, that's kind of how this collective delusion around, you know, work is, you know, my primary source of meaning and purpose, work is what I love, you know, came about in the first place. It was in part a response to this decreasing sense of job security.
That is Aki Ito, a senior correspondent for Business Insider. She recently wrote about the idea of hustle culture. It's called How Hustle Culture Got America Addicted to Work. Really great piece of writing, and it was awesome to be able to talk to you on air. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Ryan. Thanks for having me.